now call to order the formal action session of the Commonwealth Transportation Board for the month of October 2015. Should be able to find the agenda. Let's see, where do I have that? This C2B action, okay. All right, the first topic of discussion will be our public comment. I've asked those, I'll call your name up just to remember you have basically around 3 minutes. We'd ask you to keep your comments concise. We want to have everybody have an opportunity to speak who wants to, and I'll call your name up, and we're anxious to hear what you have to say. And if I mispronounce your name, please, I apologize. I don't mean any disrespect. Mr. Pagano, sir, glad to have you here today.
Thank you, Chair, members of the board. The resolution before you regarding discontinuance of the short portion of the street in Washington, Virginia appears to me to be flawed in significant ways. The summary you've been provided for previous public comments taken in Rappahannock County fails entirely to assess and qualify those comments, which actually adhere to the central statute and regulation-defined parameters, which supposedly govern whether a street is included or removed from state responsibility. Simply claiming to support a discontinuance resolution without showing that there is no longer a valid and continuing public use convenience currently being met can hardly be considered germane. Statutes are there, I thought, so that issues like this aren't decided simply as a matter of popularity or due to the influence exerted by particular parties. The street in question was judged by a previous Commonwealth Transportation Board to meet the statutory requirements for acceptance, as required for public convenience. Those exact same requirements are met today, since the public use and convenience hasn't decreased at all. Even your chief of policy, Mr. Walton, has weighed in on the issue and provided his evaluation in response to Lawyer Fisk's assertion that the Commonwealth has no authority to even hold a hearing on this matter of a discontinuance of the town. That was in a communication by Mr. Walton dated August 26th of this year, in which he said in part, "As such, I do not believe the statutory requirements have been met for discontinuing the road, and I believe having the public hearing helps to correct the record in the event that someone determines to appeal the board's decision." One of the points made in the summary in favor of discontinuance says that VDOT hasn't maintained the street. It's false. The tie-in and 50-plus feet, which were taken in, have been paved where they weren't. The previous drainage problems were addressed. Pavement markings were provided and been maintained, as well as appropriate signage, which was previously lacking. Even more important, the street itself, as well as the tie-in, has been consistently plowed by the department in winter. Recent poor conditions of pavement has been the fault of the town utilities, in which failed miserably in appropriate patching and restoration when they cut the pavement for installation and maintenance. They didn't even get a permit, I don't think. Whether or not the area involved is permitted to be altered for beautification, as you well know, isn't an issue which depends upon the road being discontinued. Comments focusing on such stuff as beautification, as do the vast majority of those in favor of discontinuance, have no bearing on the statutory requirements. If you go through the package in detail, you'll find that speaking to the issue hasn't been the strong point of any of the arguments in favor of discontinuance, and you will find that petitions supporting beautification have zero relevance. Despite the fact that they've been included in the summary supporting the discontinuance, those petitions with 135 signatures were in support of beautification. The petitions were circulated and signed before the issue of state discontinuance was even publicly raised. They have nothing to do with the issue. In the same vein, there's nothing inherent in the CTB discontinuance which would prevent improvements to the leased facilities used by the post office and owned by the town council. The summary you have been provided brushes off the significant and pertinent issue of consistent and continuing public use by offhandedly mentioning the fact that the streets have been there since the 1700s. The more salient fact, which was part of that comment, is that the street met your requirements for inclusion in 1994 and continues to meet them today. I urge you in the strongest possible fashion to reject the proposal for its failure to meet the statutory requirement, and the street no longer meets a public need for convenience. You have no data to support that. That requirement that it meets a public need for convenience was met in 1994 when your predecessors included the street in the state system, and that hasn't changed. Please don't let this be a popularity contest and stick to the central issue, continuing ongoing public use for convenience. Please, scuttle this inappropriate, unjustified resolution. When you
to wrap up, Mr. Pagano.
All right, I'm sorry.
I understand. Just take the time to wrap up, please.
When the board accepted the street in 1994, one of the reasons that was part of the package that led you to do this was, it was highlighted that this piece of street served historic buildings. Not only served historic buildings, the road itself has an historic nature, which the town comp plan actually recognizes, and I can quote from that, but I'll finish it up. You have it all in writing anyway. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Town. Thank you very much. Mr. Rob Whitfield.
Mm-hmm.
Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon. I didn't sign up, but there's a lot of...
Would you like to
ask? Yes, of course. There are many, many issues on I-66 inside the Beltway as well as outside the Beltway. I can't speak for Delegate Marshall, but I gather he has requested a delay in your approval of the preferred alternative. And I was really quite surprised listening to this presentation today. I heard no discussion of alternatives. I asked Susan Shaw outside, I said, when are you going to discuss the alternative? She said, we did that last month in Bristol, which I conveyed to Delegate Marshall at about 11 o'clock. Anyway, I don't know what's being said on Fox News, but I can tell you that Delegate Marshall has certainly got a lot of people who say, we need to make these decisions in Northern Virginia. And I don't speak for Bob, but I certainly understand. I don't know all the issues. What I say from my perspective, having been involved Committee for Dulles for 25 plus years and going to over 3,000 public meetings on transportation and land use in the last decade alone, that the alternatives, in my mind, have not been properly flushed out on I-66 outside the Beltway. I'm not convinced that there is the demand to have the two-way toll lanes both ways west of Route 28. I don't have the population and demographic information, but there was mentioned this morning about the Rural Crescent. All I would say is I think you would find that the public would be more accepting to give them the extra month so that they can understand how you reached the decisions you did. I certainly don't support the bike trail from Merrifield to Manassas or whatever it's going to be. And the whole issue of subsequent funding, I haven't heard. There was a meeting at Fairfax County 2+ weeks ago where questions were raised, and I haven't seen the correspondence to know. So let me switch to the inside the Beltway. I've never been involved in a project in which so little information has been made available to the public. The libraries in Arlington and Tyson's Primit have no information. Indeed, I talked to Marie Travesky, who I think is working on public information outside the Beltway. I said, I don't understand. There is zero information. Is it that you're trying to put one over on the public? And Marie's a nice lady, and she didn't want to say anything. I can tell you, I've been to at least 50 meetings of NVTC, whose motto used to be Think Outside the Car, whose present website is novatransit.org. They are not interested in helping fund highways. They have a certain mission, which is important. VRE is successful, WMATA is not. You have huge challenges ahead of you in dealing with the WMATA problems. So I'm glad you're coming to Northern Virginia in December, but I don't think it's appropriate to take action on a preferred alternative on a project when the people up there want more input. In fact, the last big point to make is that last week's meetings were done as a public session without opportunity for public input and comment. So I really think you have to, I know it's going to be painful, but I think you will benefit from showing the public that you all have properly considered the alternatives. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Whitfield. Is Renee here? When we take this up, would you come up and present the many public hearings that have happened so the board knows what has happened before they take the vote? If you would, please, on that side. Certainly, I'll give you some leeway there.
I apologize. I didn't come prepared to speak truthfully. I went to 3 of the 4 inside the Beltway, and to her credit, Renee and Susan did allow public comments at those meetings, but the ones outside the Beltway last month, 2 weeks ago, didn't. Don't understand the difference in approach. Out of well over 300 or 400 people at those meetings, I was in Arlington, VDOT, and in Loudoun County, only 3 individuals stood up to speak in favor of this proposal, your proposal. And I think, as far as I know, every single politician on both parties who spoke there did not support the inside the Beltway plan. And so I've written correspondence to you, as which you're aware, but I'll let others decide that.
Thank you. Ms. Hamilton, you'll point that out, and so the board will have that information in that. So thank you. Thank you, Mr. Whitfield. Mr. Gregory Scott. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. Good day to the members of the Commonwealth Transportation Board. My name is Greg Scott. I appear today on behalf of the grassroots I-66 commuter advocacy group that's called the 66 Alliance. The Alliance is a growing group of I-66 commuters, now almost 900 members from 5 when we got started, committed to challenging many facets of VDOT's plans for 66, both inside and outside the Beltway. Our website is at 66alliance.org. The Alliance members are united by our concerns about VDOT's plans to change the carpooling rules on 66 from HOV2 to HOV3. We are concerned about VDOT's plans to end the clean fuel vehicle plate program for all of 66. You can imagine my little bit of shock when I pulled up in the parking lot across the street this morning to park my hybrid vehicle and found there were designated parking spaces for my hybrid. So Virginia Beach is promoting hybrids, but appears VDOT has decided not to do so anymore. We're also concerned about VDOT's plan to toll 66 in both directions during the morning and evening rush hours, thereby impacting thousands of reverse commuters. Our concerns apply to VDOT's plans both inside and outside the Beltway, although I know the board is considering only the outside the Beltway portions of VDOT's plans today. The 66 Alliance urges the board to reject VDOT's preferred alternative for 66 outside the Beltway. VDOT should go back to the drawing board. The Alliance does support many aspects of VDOT's new plan, such as increasing new enforcement mechanisms for HOV lanes, increasing options for transit, van pools, and carpooling on 66 outside the Beltway, adding new HOV capacity, constructing dedicated entrance and exit ramps for HOV lanes, and separating the HOV lanes from general purpose lanes with bollards or a barrier. All of these steps will increase 66 capacity to carry more vehicles, reduce congestion, and reduce air emissions in the corridor. And all of these improvements can be paid for by the so-called Northern Virginia Congestion Relief Fund, adopted in April 2013 after all of the VDOT studies had been done under House Bill 2313. The Alliance is not against growth and investment in infrastructure, but we are against proposals that would impose regressive tolls and negatively impact the commutes of tens of thousands of Northern Virginia commuters, taxpayers, and voters. A wide range of Northern Virginia elected officials, Democrats, independents, Republicans, county supervisors, town and city councils, delegates, state senators, and others have heard the loud objections of commuters and are weighing in against the VDOT 66 plans. Last month, the Loudoun County Board of Supervisors, I think a more representative group than the Loudoun Chamber, quite frankly, passed a resolution unanimously opposed to VDOT's plans. 3 weeks ago, a group of powerful members of the House of Delegates told VDOT to go back to the drawing board. 2 weeks ago, the Prince William County Board of Supervisors, a 6-3 division in the parties, passed a unanimous resolution condemning VDOT's plans. Currently, the Board of Supervisors in Fairfax and Fauquier counties are advancing resolutions in opposition to VDOT's plans. Ultimately, unless this board rejects VDOT's proposals, it will be up to our elected delegates and senators to put a halt to VDOT's plan for 66 when they reconvene in 2016. I will echo the comments of the person that came before me and urge this board to delay approval of the preferred option for outside the Beltway until you are in Northern Virginia. We are a week away from the elections at this point. It is not surprising that the elected representatives could not be here to voice their opinion. I think you would hear a lot from them at your December meeting if you delay till then. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to present the Alliance's views. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you very much for your comments, sir. Thank you. Ms. Nancy Smith.
You could read my handwriting. It was pretty bad today. I apologize.
Okay.
Nancy Smith with the Northern Virginia Transportation Alliance. A couple of matters today. I understand that when the resolution that was previously on the agenda dealing with Potomac River crossings may be deferred to December at this point. However, wanted to say that given the Alliance's longstanding support of upgrading the American Legion Bridge, constructing a new western Potomac River crossing, improving the 301 Governor Nice Bridge and exploring the cost-benefit for a new Metro Transit Tunnel. I thought it important to reiterate the Alliance's support that the resolution directing the Secretary to engage in discussions with Maryland on these and other bi-state transportation matters is important for your consideration. The Alliance does agree that with you all that there is no single solution to our regional mobility needs and observes that the Commonwealth's recent Potomac River Crossing study did not evaluate a single solution or any solutions to this problem. I do understand that Fairfax and Montgomery County, as well as Arlington County and the City of Alexandria, have sent letters asking for a different but single projects to be addressed. I think that points out that there is no single solution, but I think this also does raise a question of imagine what the public outcry would be if any two jurisdictions were to say, propose that due to our limited state resources that all transit funding in the state be focused solely on Metro, or that the CTB chooses only spend transportation dollars in Northern Virginia. I imagine that those would have quite an outcry because Maryland and Virginia do have multiple needs in common, including additional bridge capacity, and we can't afford to focus our attention on only a single solution without careful consideration and study of that one solution should take precedent over all others. All needs should be subject to discussion, and the sooner we do that, the better. Moving to I-66, particularly out to the 66 outside the Beltway, the Alliance does support the preferred alternative and hope that you will approve that for later today. We think it's a bold solution that will help address today's demand and our future growth that is forecasted to occur in the mostly western portions of our region. In terms of 66 inside the Beltway, the Alliance continues to support additional lane and transit capacity inside the Beltway. However, among the current proposals, we think fatal flaws is the assumption that 66 inside the Beltway congestion is only a peak period problem, when in fact congestion is very heavy and destined to get worse during post peak period and the weekends. And would like to point out that the multimodal study upon which this project is based in fact points out that the multimodal packages that do the most improve multimodal flexibility are those that also add a lane in both directions. And those are the packages that would do the most to reduce congestion, improve vehicle and transit travel times, and reduce diversion on local roads. So I think that the current proposal that postpones new lanes likely for a good decade or so does ignore this fundamental need of the off-peak periods and kicks that fundamental need can down the road to future administrations to have to deal with. Committing to a more immediate construction and funding of additional lanes in both directions, we think would significantly improve support for this proposal inside the Beltway and would meet the 24/7 needs of travelers in the corridor, keeping in mind that only 20% of our region's daily trips are actually commuting trips. So thank you.
Thank you. That's all the people that I have that have signed up. Is there anyone else who would like to address the board before we move to our actions? Yes, Mr. Pollard.
Mr. Pollard with the Southern Environmental Law Center. You all have a lot on your agenda today, and we sent a letter ahead of time, which I hope you had a chance to read. It goes into more detail, a number of the items. Just like to touch on very briefly a few of those and to respond to some things that have just been said. First on I-66 inside the Beltway, as was mentioned by the Secretary and others this morning, there is a lot of confusion about this proposal. We generally support I-66 inside the Beltway with some caveats. We agree with the clear position of the National Capital Region Transportation Planning Board that you have to do the tolling and the multimodal projects, implement those, and then the widening would take place only after evaluation of the effectiveness of these steps, as Mr. Donahue described this morning. He mentioned a five-year window. We want to urge and clarify that that five-year window be after the HOV3 takes effect, so that you can, in fact, correctly see whether these measures will work or not. because we understand that HOV2 may actually continue for some years of the project. Turning to I-66 outside the Beltway, we have serious concerns about this proposal. Again, we do support improvements to the corridor. We're glad to see DRPT and VDOT have come up with some more specifics regarding the transit component. We think that is a move in the right direction, and we think we need to continue to nail some of this down as we move forward. However, we remain extremely concerned about this project, and a lot of it's the reasons that Mr. Kirkpatrick mentioned when he was talking about the parking rod lot, and that's the historic resources and the rural crescent, and the fact that where that parking rod lot might have spurred some additional development, think of what adding 21 to 25 miles of additional pavement will do to spur additional development and induced demand, which he discussed with you this morning. So we think that the phasing of this needs to be rethought. We strongly support the transit improvements, targeted improvements to the interchanges, which are shown by the data to be the real source of the majority of the problem, as well as some additional widening, but nowhere near this much of a distance, which is going to result in digging a deeper hole for both congestion and for pollution problems for the region. Questions have been raised about the financial justification for where this stops. There are also questions about the impacts. Public has not seen that, if those exist, and we would urge you to wait until that is known. Further, the revised environmental assessment, the draft has not been yet released. The public has not had a chance to comment on that. We think it puts the cart before the horse. Mr. Kirkpatrick mentioned in response to a question earlier today that it is helpful to have the indication of this board before you finalize an EPA document, but in this case, we haven't even seen the draft revised environmental assessment. And so we have not seen anything on the benefits and impacts of this particular preferred alternative, and I think it's backwards for you to approve a preferred alternative before you have that. Finally, Potomac River crossing resolution, I've just heard Nancy say, may be delayed. If not, or when you take it up, I think this needs a lot more work. The study and the results Secretary Donahue, Deputy Secretary Donahue, presented to you, I think clearly show, as the resolution does acknowledge, the main need is American Legion Bridge, but then it goes on to focus much more on prioritization of other projects, as well as containing some very unusual language about encouraging the business community rather than other segments of the public to participate. So would urge you, if you do take up this resolution, I think it needs substantial reworking. We would oppose it, but at the very least think it needs to be significantly reworked. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pollard. Any other speakers before us today? Thank you to all those who did choose to speak. We appreciate your comments. We'll now move on to the action orders in our meeting. First is the approval of the minutes from the September 16th meeting. Is there a
motion?
Is there a second? Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? I should mention, and I mentioned before this, that the sponsor. Mr. Gargensky's request, we have, because Mr. Dyke is not here, have pulled the new business section on the Potomac resolution. That will be deferred to the next meeting at the request of the people bringing the issue to the board. Okay, our first topic is from the maintenance division. We have Mr. Gregg here. Good morning, or good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen of the board. I have four items on the agenda to bring before you today. And if it's okay, we'll just take them individually in order as they are on the agenda. The first one is in the Stanton District. It is the a landowner has requested the department to abandon 0.05 of a mile segment of a previously discontinued portion of old Route 250 in Highland County. The Transportation Board passed a resolution in August of 95 discontinuing a portion of this Route 250, and this 0.05 of a mile segment is currently being requested for abandonment as a portion of that portion that was discontinued back in 1995. Upon review of the area, VDOT staff has determined the 0.05 of a mile segment of Route 250 should be abandoned as part of the primary system of the state highways, since no public necessity exists for the continuance of this segment as a road. VDOT recommends the board approve the abandonment of this 500th of a mile section of Route 250.
Mr. Whitworth.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Passes. Thank you.
The next item, number two, is in Bristol District, Lee County. On September the 17th of 13, Lee County Supervisors wishing to memorialize the life of Maurice David Beaucoup passed a resolution requesting the bridge located on Route 833 over Powell River be named the Beaucoup Memorial Bridge. VDOT recommends this be approved.
So moved. Do we have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes. Thank you.
The next item is in Nelson County and Lynchburg District. The Nelson County Board of Supervisors has requested the CTB to discontinue two segments of Route 641 Dutch Creek Lane, and the segments are included in your package. It was posted for a public hearing. No public hearing was requested. Nelson County Board of Supervisors passed on July the 14th of this year requesting the discontinuance of these two segments of Route 641 Dutch Creek Lane. VDOT recommends the board approve the discontinuance of these two sections of Dutch Creek Lane.
Yes, this vote really is, the road has been impassable for years. So I move the action.
Have a second? Have a second? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes. Thank you. Number four.
This is in Culpeper District, Town of Washington in Rappahannock County, and this is the item the first speaker spoke to earlier. A budding landowner, the Town Council, the Town of Washington, Rappahannock County, have requested that the Commonwealth Transportation Board discontinue a segment of Route 628 Middle Street in the Town of Washington. Town Council of the Town of Washington passed a resolution on July the 13th requesting the discontinuance of this portion of Route 628. This is about a 170-foot section of this roadway. VDOT held a public hearing on October the 8th, which was attended by 56 people. A total of 25 comments were received, with 15 indicating support of the discontinuance and 10 opposing it. Two petitions also received. The first had 135 signatures in favor of discontinuing the road segment, and the second had 37 signatures against it. A transcript for the comments was provided in your packet. VDOT recommends the board approve the discontinuance of this segment of Route 628 Middle Street that begins the intersection of Route 628 and 621 Main Street and proceeds 1/100th of a mile west of this intersection.
Mr. Thompson.
If I may just add a few comments to add to the information that that's been presented here today. The roadway segment in question is 52 feet in length and 30 feet in width. It dead ends at a privately owned street and parking area that serves leased properties owned by the adjacent landowner. In accordance with the current lease arrangement, the landowner, which is the Inn at Little Washington, is required to provide adequate parking for those businesses. A number of motorists currently use the road segment for parking, but it is posted with no parking signs due to its width. Parking for the post office and other leased properties on the property is provided for in both front of the post office and on Main Street and behind the post office in a private lot. There is a streetscape project proposed by the town which includes the discontinuance of this portion of roadway and the existing private roadway and the parking lot beyond the terminus of the road in question, which will provide enhanced access to the business parking that includes the public parking for the town post office and pedestrian facilities as well. The roadway was entered into the secondary system in 1994 at the town's request. This transaction never changed the ownership. It simply provided VDOT with the right to maintain the roadway. Therefore, the issue before us today, as you know, is whether or not the road is required for public convenience, which is the statutory requirement for the discontinuance of a road from the secondary road system for maintenance. The discontinuance by VDOT would allow the town and the inn to make the necessary exterior and parking accommodations for the U.S. Post Office and the other leased businesses. I believe that this standard has been met, so I'm making a motion that we approve the discontinuance as presented here today.
So I just want to confirm, first of all, is there a second?
Second.
Just want to confirm with VDOT, Mr. Kilpatrick, you also, the department has made the determination that this is not in the public's interest, in other words.
Yeah, so the code talks about the provisions for discontinuing maintenance, and we believe that it meets that standard for the department to no longer maintain this segment of roadway.
Well, Mr. Chairman, let me ask just a quick question. We're not really discontinuing maintenance; we're abandoning it, right? Help me understand that, because there's a difference. Because the underlying property will revert to the joining landowner in one instance and not in the other. True.
Mr. Kilpatrick.
And I might ask my in-house legal expert to talk just briefly on the difference between discontinuance and abandonment, because there's a very distinct difference between the two acts.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Kilpatrick, Mr. Crayley, that's the difference. The transportation board, if it was a primary system, you have the ability to abandon. On the secondary system, all the board does is discontinue. And all it means is a determination is made that there's basically not a reason for state funds to continue to maintain the roadway. That's the bottom line. It's still a public road. And it's going to stay a public road until the county takes action to abandon it. And so all the board is doing today is removing it from our system, the VDOT system, so that VDOT will no longer be expending state resources for maintaining the road.
It's not currently in the state right away. It's in the county.
Yeah. It's the town. It's the second. It's the town.
The town owns the underlying fee.
Right.
But that's not the issue. I mean, we own very little fee property in our road system. Most of it's prescriptive.
Right.
You know, our role is VDOT's role is basically just to maintain the roadway as part of the secondary system.
The other question, I was looking through the stuff, I want to make sure that I understand this correctly. There's no effect with access to the post office. The post office still has the door. There's no door on the side here or anything. It's a front door. You go through, and so all this access to the post office stuff is not going to be affected by this.
Correct.
Right?
And there's parking in front
of the
post
office.
I thought that. I just wanted to confirm.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Valentine.
So while we are removing it from our system, will the road be maintained?
It's up to the town.
Ms. Chair, Ms. Valentine, not by the department. Now, whether anybody else maintains it, I can't speak to that.
So does it...
It's no longer our responsibility.
Does it hurt the community of Washington not to have that road maintained?
I don't believe that it does. The convenience that's provided by the road, if there's any convenience that's provided by the road, which I don't think there is, it's just because of the generosity of the adjacent landowner who allows cars to turn around on private property to come back out. It literally is 50 feet long. Without the use of the private property adjacent to this stub road,
mm-hmm.
cars would literally pull in and have to back out onto Main Street.
That was my question to Mr. Kilpatrick. Had the department gone through and made an assessment, was it worth spending the public money? And they have said it is not.
And long term, there's a streetscape plan in place that
there is.
Private property owners would
yes.
want to implement.
And it's designed to actually enhance the use of the whole area. To improve the parking, improve the traffic flow around it.
So I just wanted to clarify that.
They obviously have an interest in keeping the leased properties there.
Yes.
So this is designed to enhance that.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, thank you.
Thank you,
Chair. Greg. Okay, so next up, Ms. Pryor.
Good
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I have two items for your consideration today. The first item is the amendment of 5 projects to the 6-year improvement program. There are 3 paving projects in Bristol, Fredericksburg, and Richmond District. There's 1 signal project in Northern Virginia and 1 safety project in Richmond. I recommend your approval.
Is there a motion?
Chairman, I just would ask. I can't open any of this stuff.
I can't.
Yeah,
oh, we're not awarding bids, are we? We're just adding projects to the 6-year
plan. Adding projects, you should. Yeah.
We're adding projects that have not been bid.
That's correct.
That's correct.
Yeah, I'm good with it. I've moved that we adopt.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Mr. Chairman,
if you go to the file folder called CTV October and open it, the links are broken on some of these, what's happened, so you'll need to go to that CTV October and open that, and then you can go down and look at, and what we'll do is we'll call out the location.
Can
so
you put it on the screen? Can you do it for me? Oh, okay. This is not on the screen. Oh, okay. Okay, I got you. Okay. I thought these were showing up there.
So, Carol, can you tell us where this is? Is this if we scroll down, it says. All right. So if you'll go to that, it's the one that's 143 kilobytes. You see that one? If you open it up, that's the one that should have the link that shows the projects.
Can you see it now, guys?
One's a decision brief, and one's the actual.
Right.
You go to Appendix A. That will list
the five
projects. And if would you let me to read them out?
There you go.
Does everybody have them now?
Yeah.
Brown and Howard?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
Is there anyone who would like to revote, or are you okay?
No.
Mr. Brown, you okay?
I can change my vote to a yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I agree. I thought. Okay. All right. So now number 6 is the transfers. It would be the one below that. Is that correct?
And if you'll click on Attached List, that will provide you the list of projects.
Amendment, enhancement.
Which one is it?
They're not now, but it's, it's down there, Resolution SYP Amendments. There's only 4 or 5 of those 2.
Yeah.
Does everybody have those?
Our normal monthly transfers of surplus funds.
Right.
Okay, is there a motion?
Motion moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion?
Mr. Secretary, did you want to take both items together or separately?
Well, they already voted on the first one.
Okay.
Yeah, this is on. So they approved that one. Is there a second? We did have any discussion or comments? All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, thank you. Ms. Pryor.
Mr. Lawson.
What do I need to go to now? Well, Mr. Lawson, why don't you talk about whatever you want to talk about?
don't give him that.
No. Here we go. Mr. Lawson, you're going to talk to us about authorizing the your stable. Okay, yes, Mr. Lawson.
Yes. The resolution I'm have for you today is authorizing the withdrawal of funds within the revenue stabilization fund that was set aside for the CPR, the Commonwealth Capital Projects Bond Program. Just a little background for those of you that weren't here. The program had its first, the bond indenture was created in 2010, and then in 2011, As you recall, that was an acceleration, heavy acceleration of the bond program. The bond program is supported by revenues of the Priority Transportation Fund, and the Priority Transportation Fund is required to be able to support 100% of that service of any program supported by it. At the time, with the heavily accelerated bond program and the forecasted revenues at that time, the revenues are very tight in being able to support the forecasted debt program. So in order to have sufficient revenues in place to strengthen the bond issuance and the bond program, $50 million was taken from the Priority Transportation Fund in existing cash, existing revenue, and placed with the trustee into a revenue stabilization fund to support debt service in case actual revenues were to fall short. Since that point in time, two things really have happened that has changed the outlook. One, the revenues have performed better than were originally forecasted at that time. And two, the bond program, while accelerated and committed, the spending has not occurred as quickly as expected, and we haven't had to sell the bonds as fast as expected. So as a result, we no longer see any need of holding that revenue stabilization fund intact. As part of the indenture that established the stabilization fund, it also allowed the board to add or subtract from the fund as appropriate, as it saw fit. And working with bond counsel, we have drafted this resolution that would, in essence, subtract the full $50 million out of the debt service reserve fund. What the resolution would then do is have the $50 million returned to the Priority Transportation Fund and then made available for priority transportation projects as permitted through the legislation that directs the use of funds within the Priority Transportation Fund. So the long and the short of all of that is that this $50 million that's sitting in this debt service reserve fund is no longer needed, and that the purpose is to bring it back into the Priority Transportation Fund to where it can be put to use on priority projects, which this board will have to take action on the use thereof. So with that, no questions, I am recommending this for your approval and hope you will still approve.
Somebody clear on what the Priority Transportation Fund is? Everybody clear on that?
Okay. Motion.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Thank
you, Mr. Lawson. Mr. Walton.
Mr. Chairman, I have the next three items on the agenda. The first one is a request for the board to approve a number of changes to the limited access features of the Dulles Toll Road and the Dulles Greenway in order to accommodate the construction of the Silver Line. We need to move the right-of-way limits and break access at several places for power track substations, tiebreaker stations, stormwater management ponds, some retaining walls, various matters associated with the construction of the Silver Line, and we would request your approval.
Mr. Chairman, motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you, Mr. Walt.
Mr. Chairman, the next item is a matter that was presented to you at the workshop last month. It is a location decision by the board on the Interstate 95 Rappahannock River crossing project in the Fredericksburg area. It would involve the construction of two additional collector distributor lanes in each direction between exits 130 and 133, and interchange improvements at Route 17. The purpose of the project is for safety improvements in the corridor, as well as improving the level of service. We would ask the board's approval of this location.
Mr. Connors.
I move to approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion or comments? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Mr. Walton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The last item I have is dealing with the Local Assistance Division on a revenue sharing reallocation in the city of Waynesboro. There was a revenue sharing project that had some funds left over after the construction. So the city of Waynesboro would like to establish a safe routes to school project at a local school and ask that that project be established and that the funds from the other project be transferred to that safe routes to school project, and we request your approval.
Chairman, I move.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion or comments?
Can I just ask a brief question?
You certainly may, Mr. Rose.
Safe routes to schools, aren't we? Isn't that program going well?
No, Mr. Chairman, the Safe Routes to School program was subsumed into the Transportation Alternatives Program. It used to be separate. Now they're the same.
My mistake. I remember now. Thank you.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Latimer.
Mr. Chairman and members of the board, have a resolution for you for consideration based on the review of the Rail Enhancement Fund and Rail Program. We've been conducting a review of rail programs for better part of a year now with the Rail Committee, and under House Bill 1887, we were directed, or the Commonwealth Transportation Board was to develop no later than December 1st recommendations on the benefit cost analysis associated, or the benefit costs with the Rail Enhancement Fund. And as a reminder, the report, which is included as Attachment A to this resolution, makes the recommendation to allow transfer of REF funds to the Rail Preservation Fund without triggering the requirements of the Rail Enhancement Fund legislation, because the programs are wholly different in their intent. Also, as part of this review, the Appropriations Act language had directed the RPC to work with the Secretary's Office on an expenditure report of rail funds, so that is part of the report, which is Attachment A. Attachment B is a summary of the policies that are coming out of this report, and that will be something that will direct the department in our application evaluation going forward.
Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second then?
Second.
Any discussion or comment?
Mr. Chairman,
yes,
and I hate to slow the, to use your analogy, slow the train down.
No problem.
But this is pretty significant. I'm trying to look at the Rail Program's Legislative Policy and Expenditure Review of 2015. Are we adopting all the policies in there, or I'm not sure exactly what we're doing right now, because I can't.
We're asking you to approve the report and have it so that we can forward it to the General Assembly, and the report itself does include the adoption of new policy goals associated with the REF program, and those were presented to you all last month and have been discussed and reviewed by the Rail Committee as well.
Well, but I believe this is the first we've seen of this document. Is that true, or do we have it last month? Because I'm concerned that we're taking the clawback provisions away, and I want to understand what the measurable goals are going to be. If I'm looking at the right thing here, it'd be helpful to be able to pull this thing up.
Yeah.
We do not have a recommendation to remove the clawback provisions. We do have the recommendation for a task force to expand the types of data that we track as performance, but clawback provisions
remain. The clawback provisions will apply.
Okay, well, let me read you this, what it says right here. The intent would be to shift focus away from performance measures with a clawback provision on a specific project, and instead report measures focused on growth and operations throughout the entire network.
Again, this is going to be the focus of some additional review by a task force as well, but one of the findings that we had and some of the feedback we've received from our stakeholder groups as well was that could we look at different ways to track the performance of projects beyond simply the movement of carloads and or passengers, which are really the two metrics we use right now. There are some legal and constitutional provisions that may prohibit us from really being able to use other factors besides those for the purpose of measuring the performance of projects, but there may be better ways to evaluate
or measure how many carloads have been moved, as opposed to looking at a small segment, for example, to look at more network-wide benefits. Those are the types of things that we're going to look back, continue to look at with this task force. That group may come back with a recommendation not to change anything, but okay. This is something that we want to.
So this is just something to look at. All right, I just want to make sure
we're changing that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. The second thing I wanted to ask a question about on this was dual freight access, rail dual freight access, and I got the sense from the document that we weren't going to be that wasn't going to be as much of a policy focus as it used to be. And I'm not sure I agree with that, so I want to understand that a minute.
Well, I'll start with that, and I'm going to invite any members of the Rail Committee to comment on that as well, to add to some of the discussions that we've
right.
had. But there was some discussion that perhaps instead of focusing on dual access for freight operators as a policy goal, what we really should be looking at instead is projects that serve both a freight or a passenger and a passenger rail benefit as a matter of priority. Is that
with the caveat that there are going to be areas that it's only freight.
Yes.
There's no
yeah.
passenger, and they shouldn't be penalized because they don't happen to be in a passenger corridor.
Well, and that's not to say that encouraging dual access or of the freight network is not still an important thing, but in terms of the priorities that we'll use to actually evaluate projects, we would want to prioritize projects that have both a passenger and a freight benefit.
Well, and I understand what I was reading this, I was concerned. It looks like we're getting passenger rail versus freight rail mixed into a real dual access issue. I think it's important for businesses in the Commonwealth, to the extent we can promote dual rail access, to do that because it's going to provide them with better rates, right, between different carriers that can access their property. It's extremely important to the port that there be dual access there. So is this just setting up another task force to look at that, or is this recommending that we shift the policy away from something to something else?
That would be the recommendation is actually, and again, one of the things that the Rail Committee did was review the CTB's previous goals and then discuss whether or not those were still the CTB's highest priorities. And at that point, it was determined that really what they'd want to focus on instead is the dual access or dual benefits of passenger and freight as opposed to dual access. Anything that anyone...
No, I was just saying the different issues, the
yeah.
passenger very few situations where we'll have dual access. We hope many situations where we'll have passenger freight.
Well, let me just make myself clear, and then I guess I'll vote accordingly. But I don't have any problem with trying to have dual capacity on tracks for freight and passenger and trying to work through that so we can get more access to passenger rail, and especially the high-speed rail network that's coming through the center of Virginia. I think it's really important. I also think we had a policy where, to the extent we could, we would promote dual access by freight carriers to pieces of property, to businesses, to the port, to everything else. To the extent we're watering that down, I'm not for that. So I'm not sure how you...
I don't think we're watering it down.
I think it's a good position that we should be
okay, so, all right, well,
yeah,
then
it's
then
not
I'm
exclusive.
Good.
No. I mean, it wasn't trying to
okay.
you know, give one...
All right.
If there was a way to benefit both passenger and freight, you know, that would be recognized, but it was not intended to in any way hurt or inhibit
freight.
Yeah.
Dual access.
Dual access.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Satisfied? Is everybody satisfied? Okay. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Mr. Pittard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the board, I'm here today representing the department to ask y'all to allocate funds to allow the department to expedite segments of the Richmond to Washington, D.C. high-speed rail environmental and engineering project. This would allow the department the opportunity to begin construction on these segments sooner than the overall project will allow for within this 123-mile corridor. The request is for $3.5 million, and this would allow for both expedited NEPA for those segments and for related project development costs. Further, the funding, the source of those funds is the Intercity Passenger Rail and Operating and Capital Fund. For fiscal year 2015, we had excess revenues of $3.8 million. The request we're making today is for $3.5 million. I do have to add to the request that I would like to clarify some language with a small amendment. The resolution before you states this is for NEPA only. It doesn't say only, but it doesn't also, in the resolution, it doesn't state that it's also for other project development costs. And those costs are attorneys, financial consultants, and working through the development agreements with our rail partners.
Are you adding that in the next to the last whereas?
There's the last whereas and the now therefore. I have it written here. If I'll pass it to Carol.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we adopt the amendments to the resolution.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any comments or discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you, Mr. Peter.
We need to adopt it.
Right? Oh, you're right.
I was waiting.
So now, I'm
waiting for my note.
Okay, so now
such a parliament
right.
There.
That's right. No, he's right. Mr. Peter, is there a motion for now the new resolution as amended?
As amended.
That's the first thing. Okay. Is there any discussion or comments on the new amendment resolution? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you.
Thank you.
Yep. Mr. Donahue.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I'm here before you with a resolution regarding the adoption of the six-year improvement program development through House Bill 2 and House Bill 1887. I do have two amendments based on the board's discourse during today's presentation. The first would be to add a second, be it further resolved, that would read as follows, that the policy adopted by the board shall be reviewed after the adoption of the fiscal year 17 to 22 six-year improvement program, which is going to be the one adopted this next June, so at the completion of the first round. And then the remaining portion of that would read, and that the policy shall sunset on January 1, 2016, unless reaffirmed by the board prior to that date.
Move that we adopt the amendment to the resolution.
Second.
Is there any discussion or comment? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, now, Mr.
Mr. Chairman, I have one change to the policy as well that I'd like to bring up to the board. It's on page 2. It's in the first full paragraph in the second sentence. This is the sentence that starts with, the board may adjust the timing of funds programmed to projects selected in previous HB2 cycles to meet the cash flow needs of individual projects. And the amendment is going to be in addition to the end of that subclause 1. And so with the amendment, subclause 1 would read, reduce the total amount of state and federal funding committed to an individual project unless it is no longer needed for the delivery of the project, or the project sponsor is unable to secure permits and environmental clearances for the project. And this would just deal with the situation in a rare event where a project is moving forward and it ends up that we are unable to secure a permit and cannot build the project, and then this would allow the board to remove those funds and throw them back into the cycle.
But also move the adoption of that amendment.
You need two ors. You need another or at the end of the amendment because you got to go into number 2.
It would have a comma, sorry, at the end. There's an or existing there. Right for number 2.
Yeah, but you're adding another clause to subclause 1. You're saying reduce the total amount of the individual unless nor need for delivery project, or because you can't get the environmental reviews.
Yes.
Or 2, increase the total. So you need to. Just, I think we're good.
Add the or.
Don't do that.
Not and or. Got it. So. All right. Is there a motion?
I'll move that already.
Oh, you moved it. Okay. Now, I think that's probably the
second.
Okay. Second. Okay. Any more comments or discussions? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Now we need to vote on the policy.
So, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I have a resolution that would adopt the policy regarding the development of the six-year program for the House Bill 2 programs that we discussed at the July, September, and now October meetings, and really help staff develop for you scenarios and a six-year program for your consideration.
Is there a motion?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Any discussion or comments? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you. Mr. Moore, and I know you're up here on this location approval. Would you have Ms.
Renee
Hamilton come up? And I would like for the board, I have some comments before the board, to, if you could just please update the public outreach and how long this has been going on, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I'm Renee Hamilton, Deputy District Administrator. When we first started this project, we basically was directed to have a very robust public outreach, and that's exactly what we did. To date, we've had over 200 meetings, and those meetings included public information meetings as well as public hearings, very well attended. At our public meeting, hearing in the spring, we had over 1,200 folks who attended. We just completed our public information meeting last week, a series of four of those, attended by nearly 600 people. Actually, we had over 60 meetings with elected officials on all levels, federal, state, and local. We've had many meetings with our local partners as well as our regional partners and our federal partners. The Regional Transportation Planning Board last week actually voted to include the I-66 in the Constrained Long Range Plan, as well as Fairfax County unanimously supported I-66. So we still have meetings ongoing, but just unprecedented in the amount of meetings that we've had, and we're still willing to do more.
Ms. Hamilton, in this location adjustment, Mr. Moore, this isn't our normal process would follow up. We're not pushing it forward or pushing it back. This is the normal way we would do this. Yes, normal time.
And just to fill in the record a little bit, because the gentleman that talked about, one of the gentlemen that talked about it mentioned some of the boards that had voted against or not to support it. Fairfax County is approximately 1.2 million people, approximately an eighth of the state's population. It's not one party or the other. They unanimously voted to support this. And also, this runs directly through their county. It more or less bisects it. So they have skin in the game in a big way in this. So no project we put forward will be perfect. But there's been a lot of work to try to make this a consensus compromise solution.
The other comment, I think I provided to the board, it was mentioned that Delegate Marshall sent me a letter, which I provided to the board. I provided to you my response to Delegate Marshall and then his response. In deference to the delegate, I do want to go on the record and say I find no reason why I should pull this off the agenda today, and I'm going to leave it on for a vote. But I do want to know it was considered, it was responded. I believe this is the appropriate action to take, and with all due respect, we're going to hold this vote today. On that. If you follow some of the logic, it would be every vote we ever took would have to be in the region we were in. That is not the role of this board. It is the role to make sure that this robust outreach is done. You have the information to make this. And as I said before, we're working through a methodical way, and I believe we have the information. So just want to make sure that was on the record. Mr. Moore.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I'm asking you to bring forward to you for your consideration item 14. Action on location approval for I-66 outside the Beltway, as previously briefed by our commissioner, and the resolution that was presented for consideration last week, I believe, in your packets. If you look at the first page, I'm assuming you can pull them up, but let me know if you can't. Down on the third, whereas, it has a description on what we're doing as far as HOT 3 and the three lanes, and then the actual additional lane in there is an HOT lane that we believe will also help with buses and transit, because it gives us that capacity that they don't have even in the HOT lanes or the HOV lanes now. If you go down to the second page on the third, whereas, that kind of lays out the multimodal nature
the lanes themselves, the bus service, the park and ride lots, and the things that we're looking at, you know, the quarter-wide bikeway. Again, this has got a multimodal approach to it. I think there's an awful lot in there, and this is such a large project that it's going to have, it's going to be open to criticism, but what we are trying to do is, like I said, work to a consensus area that we can make this both work, make it achievable, and make it affordable.
So it's fair to say this is the preferred alternative. It's not the final location. It's not the final design. We have a lot to do, and I'll just point out this project is we have listened to public input and changed immensely in terms of its actual location. So we've got a point of the board. We have a lot more to do. It's not done, a lot more to design, how we're going to procure it, which we'll be talking about next month and there. So we're not done, but it is time for us to give the team the approval to move forward with the project in terms of the way it's planned.
We'll continue to work through design, procurement, and even, and I'll give an example, 95 express lanes. Just as week recently, it's about a month ago, we're out visiting with the community to wrap up things as we're completing construction, trying to close out and make good on commitments we've made.
And I think in Mr. Kilpatrick's presentation, he listed out there's much more public outreach to come over and above the, I believe, unprecedented amount that's been done today. So,
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Could we comment on what percentage of those meetings where we allowed public input?
Yes.
In our public information meeting that we held very early in January and February of last year, we had public comment an opportunity for them to ask questions as well as to just make comments. At our public hearing in the spring, they were also given time to actually make statements. At our recent meeting, however, we provided information, but they still were able to provide written comments, and we had a court reporter at all of our meetings as well to take their comments.
So it's fair to say every meeting, either through oral or written, there was able to receive comments.
And the issue isn't necessary to make comments. It's to be able to do it in a microphone and have a public forum as opposed to written and oral comments. So they're taken all the time, but oftentimes somebody wants it to be a public affairs event more than anything else.
Okay, Mr. Connors?
Can you readdress the issue that Ms. Valentine brought up about the pending final environmental document? Do you see any?
I don't want to. My understanding, I think, would be because of 460 and other where we didn't have it, the permits, you know, that there would be some risk to that. We are right now in the logical sequence. We have not advanced anything. In other words, we have not entered a procurement. We are in a sequence where location is made, then we finish our environmental document. Procurement is going at the same time, but we're not allowing procurement to be finished before we have a final environmental document. I don't know if that answers the question, but we would not want to have a contract or an agreement without a final environmental document and the ability to get permits, because that would put us at risk.
And that's the difference between 460 and...
That's a difference here. Now, we are doing things concurrently, but we would not enter into an agreement unless we're assured that we can continue to move on. And we're not going to sign an agreement unless we have a final environmental document. Yeah, now, some permits would, still required to be done, but we need to have assurance that we can have those, too, before we move forward. So we've got them in sequence this time.
Thank you.
Mr. Marzynski?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I do want to move this resolution. I would add from my input as the district representative that I think we would be remiss in our responsibility as a board to not move forward. I think the number one challenge that faces the Commonwealth in transportation today, and I can say personally, this has been vetted. It has, the alternative has been looked at, and this has been decided. We worked strenuously with people who were involved in the taking up by 495 and 66 and accommodated a lot of those people. We've made the commitment today, and by you, Mr. Secretary, of working with Prince William County and the over 200 residents that I heard from specifically in Dominion Valley about the relocation of that commuter lot in the sensitive area. We're working under a constrained long-range plan that has HOV3 coming. whether this is done or not in 2020. Their free lanes are provided, so they're not being taken away. It's time to move this forward and act. And so I put forth the resolution and make the motion.
Second.
Second by Mr. Williams. Is there any discussion or other comments? All right. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Moore. Thank you very much. Ms. Hamilton, thank you for your efforts. I think that concludes our action items. Oh, nope. I'm sorry. My trusty deputy needs to come back up, and rarely this happens. I think it's the first time that I've known in the 2 years. Mr. Donahue wants to change something.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, my apologies. On item 13, the first amendment that I provided would have the policy sunset on January 1st, 2016. That is actually 6 months before the conclusion yeah. of the first House Bill 2 solicitation. So I would like to request the board reconsider the vote by which they adopted that resolution, and then I would like to amend.
I'd move that we reconsider the vote by which we passed the resolution.
Having voted on the prevailing side.
Having voted on the prevailing side.
And prevailed. Yeah. That's right. Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Having voted on the prevailing side, I'd ask that we reconsider the vote by which we passed the amendment.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Now we need the new amendment.
Ms. Mathis, could you read the amendment? I gave you my hard copy, but 2017 to 2016.
Then we know we got it right. Be it further resolved that the policy shall be reviewed by the board after the adoption of the FY17-22 six-year plan, and that the policy shall sunset on January 1st, 2016, unless reaffirmed by the board.
And you meant 2017.
We're going to make that 2017. So I'm going to read it.
We adopt the appropriate amendment.
I second.
Is there any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
And I move that we adopt the resolution.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any other discussion? All those in favor, please say aye. I think that moves. We need to check anything else, Mr. Donahue, before you leave.
I think we're good, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good. Okay.
You've done this.
I believe now that completes our action items. I've already talked about removing the new business. The new business was Mr. Garzinski has pulled from it. We'll review that in Northern Virginia. Yes, Mr.
And, we had no bids over $5 million, so you're not approving any contracts this month.
And Mr. Petrick, you're going to be bringing, is it next month you're going to talk about just the sometimes the board, it was a policy we adopted on the environment.
Did we distribute those, Rick? The agreements that I've executed should be in our, it's in our packet.
It's a folder. So yeah. Just want to make sure if we delegated this, Mr. Kessler, I think you have, if you see anything in there, let us know. This is the type of menial stuff that we've done. I want the board to be kept up to speed to make sure that you're not seeing anything that you didn't want to have brought to your attention in that. So. Okay, well, then with that, then we will close to come to an end the business section of Action Workshop. Thank you.